Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about hunting and angling licenses, cutbacks and layoffs at the Billings Gazette, and Facebook political spending. It's Monday, November 18th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. The owner of two Colstrip power plant units earlier slated for December closure will continue to operate into January. The Billings Gazette reports that Talon Energy reported this past week that post-shutdown work will likely delay job cuts into mid-2020. The company says postponing closure until early January will get workers on the other side of the Christmas holiday, after which progress on shutting down the units will depend on weather and staffing. It was previously announced that Units 1 and 2 would shut down by December 31st. Last June, Talon and Puget Sound Energy, which split ownership of the two units, announced the units would be shut down because they are no longer economical. Out-of-staters are becoming a greater share of the hunters and anglers in Montana. Montana Public Radio's Corn Cates Carney reports.
Out-of-state anglers accounted for more than 85% of the increase in Montana fishing license holders from 2010 to 2017. That's according to data gathered by the Legislative Fiscal Division. LFD data show that while the number of local hunters in the state declined in 2017 compared to 2010, non-resident hunters grew by more than 5,000. Resident hunters and anglers still outnumber non-residents. This week, legislative researchers released a chart showing that non-resident hunters and anglers generate the majority of revenue from hunting and fishing license sales in the state. That's largely due to Montana fishing licenses and hunting tags costing significantly more for non-residents than locals. According to the LFD chart, people from every state in the U.S. come to Montana to hunt and fish. People from California and Washington account for more than 12% of the out-of-state visitors. Residents from Idaho, Wyoming, and the Dakotas make up for about 10%. According to LFD, money the state makes from hunting and fishing licenses is combined with federal funds to pay for enforcement, education, management, improvement of wildlife habitat, and acquiring public land access. I'm Corin Cates Carney, Montana Public Radio News.
Montana employers saw a decrease in workplace injuries and illnesses, with the majority happening in private industry. The Great Falls Tribune reported that state employers had 14,100 Occupational Safety and Health Administration recordable injuries and illnesses in 2018, including 11,900 in private industry. The report says Montana's injuries and illnesses fell by 11% from 2017, when there were 15,000. The federal report says Montana is consistently higher than the national average. The Billings Gazette laid off three people from their newsroom earlier this month. The latest string of cutbacks in Billings mirror widespread newsroom layoffs in Montana and across the nation. I found out more. The Billings Gazette gave former copy editor Stephen Funk 1 week notice before he was laid off.
Mine's an empty desk. There's another empty desk at Sports. And if you've looked at the paper recently, it's, you know, like halved in size. Have you noticed that? So local got bumped into, mixed in with Nation, and I don't know. It's a huge reduction.
The empty desk at Sports belonged to Joe Cusick, a reporter covering high school sports and rodeo. Photography intern Ryan Berry was also laid off. Cusick started working at the Gazette in 1987, while Berry had only been working for 2 months. Funk started in June of this year.
One of my first questions was, why did they hire me? You know, why did you hire somebody for a full-time position in the summer if you thought this could happen?
At the same time the Gazette announced the layoffs, the paper also cut 50 pages a week, which Funk said shocked him.
If it were my paper, I would want to focus more on local content. I would want to cut out some Nation and World, because we live in a society where most people are getting that through their smartphones anyways. The news that's really hard for them to get is local reporting, local investigative stories.
An editorial published by the Gazette on November 10th addresses changes to the print version of the paper. Editor Daryl Ehrlich wrote that shifts in advertising and media more broadly led to a reduction in the amount of the paper's pages. The editorial does not address staff layoffs. Ehrlich declined to comment for this story. Stephen Funk said Ehrlich is the last person he would, quote, throw under the bus, unquote, for cutbacks at the Gazette.
Of course people are at fault. There would never be one person at fault.
The Casper News Guild, a journalism union based in Wyoming, placed blame for the cutbacks on executive leadership at Lee Enterprises, which owns newspapers nationwide, including the Billings Gazette and Casper Star Tribune. In a statement released November 12th, the Guild says Lee executives should look at cutting their own salaries and bonuses before making cuts in their newspapers to make up for falling revenue. The joint statement released by the Casper News Guild and two other journalism unions points out Lee's chairman, Mary Junk, received a $391,000 bonus last year, more than the entire Casper union's salary. Seth Klammann covers education and health for the Casper Star Tribune and is a member of the Casper News Guild.
I get paid a much lower salary than Mary Junk, and she gets to make the big decisions about how we're run. So I guess I would argue that this isn't sustainable.
Lee Enterprises owns four of the six newspapers for the largest cities in Montana: the Billings Gazette, the Helena Independent Record, the Missoulian, and the Montana Standard in Butte. Lee executives could not be reached for comment. The Gazette isn't the only Lee paper experiencing cutbacks in the state. The Missoulian laid off an employee outside the newsroom last Thursday. Over the past few years, most newspapers have experienced reporter losses, but also losses in other departments like advertising and layout. Nationwide, the journalism industry has lost more jobs than the coal industry, according to an article published by the Boston Globe in 2018. According to the same article, about 1,000 journalists get laid off every month. Dennis Zweibold, a journalism professor at the University of Montana, says Montana has experienced newsroom contractions in the past. Zweibold found in 1918 there were 200 newspapers across the state, many of which went boom and bust with the towns they published in.
You also saw a contraction every time there was sort of a new big media brought into the picture. You know, when radio came in, when television came in, you saw a contraction in bigger markets. It's something that's been happening for a long time, I guess. And it's always particular to whatever's going on in the economy and in the environment.
He says different strategies have emerged to adapt to and combat against lower numbers of employees in newsrooms. Collaboration between news organizations has started to become a more common practice.
It makes everybody sort of stronger right now if they can share and collaborate on stories. That's kind of been a project or something that's been happening in a lot of places for a long time, but it's particularly important now.
Zweibold says another solution involves reaching out to readers for financial support.
If you care about local news, you need to support it. If local news organizations don't have the wherewithal or the support of their local communities, it's really hard for them to do their jobs the way the local communities want. So get out there, engage with your local media, and support it.
After finding out about cutbacks, Stephen Funk said some readers have misconceptions about where newspapers get their funding.
I mean, I just recently found out that some community members think that the newspaper is paid for by their taxes. Clearly, we have an issue of people being uninformed about how this works, and if they don't support their local news, they're not going to have it.
For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. The National Park Service is reviewing a proposal from a wireless network company that wants to install Wi-Fi in the developed areas of Yellowstone National Park. The Bozeman Daily Chronicle reports that Access Parks has proposed upgrading internet infrastructure all over the park within buildings managed by another company that operates several of Yellowstone's historic hotels. A park document detailing some of the work says the proposed large-scale wireless communication system would cover Canyon Village, Grant Village, Lake, Old Faithful, and Mammoth Hot Springs. It would boost internet access for park employees and guests. It would involve installing antennas and transceivers, but doesn't call for any new towers or getting internet service into backcountry areas. Public comment on the proposal is being accepted until November 29th. Political ads for Montana's 2020 race for governor have appeared on Facebook at least 760,000 times since the start of the year. But Montana Public Radio found nearly all of the candidates running for the office didn't follow state rules for disclosing details about those ads to the public. Montana Public Radio's Corn Cates Carney reports.
Social media advertising offers a large and sophisticated way for politicians and political activists to target and influence voters. Much of that machine-optimized political speech in recent election cycles is happening on Facebook. That can include notices for upcoming events, attacks on political opponents, or, like in this video from Republican Albert Olszewski, asking voters to volunteer while standing in a field shooting a rifle.
Would you like to join my team? Shoot me a text.
Montana Public Radio reviewed each political ad in Facebook's archives that candidates bought in the gubernatorial race from January through September of 2019. There are more than 120 ads. Each one shows demographic information about the people it was shown to, including age, gender, and the state they live in. MTPR's review showed that when it came time for candidates to report required details about spending on those ads to the public on disclosure forms, most didn't. Jeff Mangan is Montana's Commissioner of Political Practices.
We need to continue to remind candidates that if they're spending money, if they're having a paid political ad, a paid political communication on any medium, they need to report it as the law and the rules of Montana State.
After MTPR reached out to the Political Practices Office about the discrepancy in Facebook ad spending, Commissioner Mangan sent a memo to all political candidates in Montana, reminding them, quote, "They have the responsibility and obligation to understand and comply with all Montana campaign finance laws." The November 4th memo tells candidates to turn in amended disclosure forms to include all social media advertising expenditures.
Facebook and social media advertisement, banner ads through Google, are a fairly new communication in Montana's political scene, and we just need to do a better job of reaching out to those candidates and making sure they understand what needs to be reported.
Mangan says state law requires candidates to publicly report their social media spending just like they disclose buying TV, radio, or print advertisements. The law requires candidates to say when and where the ad was shown and a brief summary of what the ad said. Lee Banville is professor of journalism at the University of Montana and author of Covering American Politics in the 21st Century. He says the main point behind requirements on political advertising disclosure is to let voters know how candidates are trying to influence them. But he says not all ads are the same.
To simply call something, oh, I'm spending money on advertising, at this day and age is not really much disclosure. Because if you're putting an ad in a newspaper, that is very different than using our psychometric data to specifically tailor a message that's there to influence me in a much more profound way.
Facebook ads are shown to users based on pages or friends they like, information on their Facebook or Instagram profiles, and the location they connect to the internet. Ads also target users based on other websites they visit or shop on.
That is a powerful piece of media. That is a powerful piece of political communication. And to say, like, that's the same as, you know, printing a poster that we're going to, like, stick on a wall somewhere that someone may or may not see, to make those equal is to really ignore the last decade of history.
Banville says Montana's campaign disclosure policy of treating all ads the same regardless of platform is seen almost everywhere in the country. Political Practices Commissioner Jeff Mangan says he's open to seeing that change.
Personally, I'm not a fan of micro-targeting at all, and hopefully the legislature and other, we'll take a look at that in future sessions. But today, they just have to report how much money they're spending on the ads, the time period it ran, and a detail as far as what the ad was about.
Montana Public Radio's review found details about candidate Facebook ad spending by gubernatorial candidates in both political parties were not properly disclosed to the public. That includes ad details in the campaigns of Democrats Mike Cooney and Casey Schreiner, and Republicans Greg Gianforte, Tim Fox, and Albert Olszewski. The Cooney and Olszewski campaigns told MTPR they were working with the Political Practices Office to update their disclosure forms. The Fox campaign said it was already fully reporting its expenses, but that didn't line up with the state's log of reports. The other campaigns didn't respond to MTPR's request for comment. Democrat Riley Neal has not run any Facebook ads, according to the company. Democrat Whitney Williams is posting ads to Facebook, but she joined the race after the most recent campaign finance reports were due. Since MTPR started its reporting, campaigns have provided additional information in public disclosure forms about their political Facebook activity. I'm Corin Cates Carney, Montana Public Radio News.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.